This is this month's instalment of Ask an Astronomer, where we ask common questions to Dr. Tim O'Brien of Jodrell Bank Observatory. Tim, thanks for coming along. I've got a list of questions in front of me, and we'll start off with an easy one, I suppose, which is one asked by many people who are perhaps not quite so familiar with the night sky. And the question is, what's that bright thing in the sky? So
we do. I mean, it's funny. It just sounds like a silly question, but we commonly get asked it. People ring up and say, "I've seen this thing in the sky. Could you tell me what it is?" And of course, the problem is you have to find out information about where they saw it, exactly where in the sky it was, what time they were looking at the sky, and so on. More often than not, the classic answer to this question is that it was the planet Venus.
Right.
So you know, quite often Venus is a bright morning or evening star in the sky, and particularly when it's a really clear sky, which is, you know, unusual for this part of the world. People look up and they see this incredibly bright thing in the sky, and they go, "My God, I've never seen anything like that before. What could that be? I'll ring up Jodrell Bank. Must be something exciting. Some stars exploded, or even maybe there's a UFO or something like that." And no, it turns out to be Venus quite often. If that isn't the case, if it isn't Venus, then we're sometimes talking about fireballs, you know, from meteorites, which do, you know, occur relatively often. So people will see a bright object flashing across the sky, even fairly obviously burning up. And that happens, you know, maybe a few times a year we get that sort of call about a bright meteor.
And this could happen any time during the year, or is there specific times when it's more likely to see?
Yeah, I mean, there are the classic sort of periods in the year when you get the meteor showers or storms from the, you know, as the Earth passes through a comet's tail. There are the classic ones that occur at various points. But and then you are going to get, you know, more chance of seeing a bright fireball. But in fact, there is a level of these things all the time. So I don't think they're necessarily always associated with those. The really bright ones that you occasionally get, I think, are a bit more random than that, in fact. So yeah, that's another thing to watch out for. And that's interesting. We had one last year, I think it was, where it was spotted. We got several calls from the public over a period of the next day or two after it happened. And it went right from the south of England all the way up to Merseyside. So it's pretty obvious this thing had sort of skated across the top of the UK, and it was spotted by several people at different points as it went across.
That must have been spectacular.
I've seen one or two on these nights when, you know, the Perseids or similar sort of meteor showers gone outside and sat in the back garden and looked up, and that is worth doing on a night like that. You know, spend half an hour outside and you will see quite a few of these shooting stars, and occasionally that you'll see a spectacular one, but I've never seen a fireball like some of these people have described to us. So I think you have to be quite lucky to spot them.
Right. So the first answer for people saying, "What's that bright thing in the sky I saw last night?" is probably Venus, and then probably a fireball, a meteorite hitting the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Well, of course, there's the classic UFO question.
UFOs, of course.
So
little green men.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I often tell people that they have seen a UFO, because in fact, UFO stands for unidentified flying objects. So if they see something in the sky that apparently is flying and they don't know what it is, they haven't been able to identify it, then they have indeed seen a UFO. The question is whether they've seen a flying saucer or some sort of alien spacecraft. And I think, you know, the likelihood is that that isn't the case.
The likelihood is it's the 747 landing.
Absolutely, But of course, you know, you have conversations with people, and I've certainly spoken to quite a few people who've seen these things, and it's difficult for us. We can't replicate in any way what they saw. They saw what they saw, they describe it, and it's very hard for us to put a definitive answer on what it was they saw. You can just go through a series of likely possibilities, and I think alien spacecraft is way down that list of likely possibilities.
Yeah, right.
It's not right impossible. It's not impossible, but I think it's unlikely. So I think that's the usual answer to that one.
Great. Okay, so question two: what's the most distant thing that the Lovell telescope has ever seen?
Now, it depends what you mean by thing, of course. We sort of talk about this. We'll talk about two different things. There's a type of object called a quasar, which is, it comes from an acronym, QSO, and that was quasi-stellar object. So it was an object that looked basically like a star, quite bright, looked like a star. It now turns out we know these things are actually not stars. They're at huge distances in the universe. They're actually galaxies in their own right. And we believe they have a supermassive black hole at the centre. And as material falls into that black hole, that causes the region around it to become incredibly bright, and we see them across large distances across the universe. For astronomers, they're bright. So, I mean, they're basically so far away that they look like stars. So although they're actually galaxies, they're so far away that the light is coming from the core of this galaxy, and they just end up looking like a point on the sky. So that's why they were called quasi-stellar objects. Now, the most distant one of these that we've looked at recently actually goes by the exciting name of SDSS 0836 plus 0054.
Wow, what an evocative name that is.
Typical astronomy name there.
Beautiful.
Of course, the point about that is there's so many objects in the sky that we couldn't give them all their own individual names because we'd soon run out of those names. So they're generally named by their position on the sky. So the numbers in that name are just its coordinates on the sky. The SDSS bit stands for Sloan Digital Sky Survey, which is a large survey of the sky that's being done at the moment. That object is a radio quasar, so it's one of these distant galaxies. It's very bright in radio waves, and it actually lies at a distance. The way we talk about distances, we talk about the redshifts. So it's the shift towards the red part of the spectrum of the light due to the expansion of the universe, and that relates to the distance. And this one is a redshift of 5.82.
5.82.
Which may or may not mean anything to you. If you put that in some terms that maybe you get a better picture of, if you think about the age of the universe since the Big Bang, we think the universe is, assuming our best understanding of cosmology at the moment, the universe is something like 13.5 billion years old. So 13.5 thousand million years old. And when we look at very distant objects, because light takes a certain amount of finite amount of time to travel to us, we're actually looking back into time. The farther away you look, the farther back in time you're seeing. So when you talk about looking at a distant object like the one we're talking about here, we're actually looking way back towards the beginning of the universe. And in this case, that redshift 5.82 is something like 1 billion years after the universe began. So it's about 13.5 billion years old. And this is looking back all the way to 1 billion years after it began.
So it's an object which was formed not long after the universe.
That's right. So that's really the interest in it. We're not, you know, astronomers aren't, you know, there's a sort of machismo element of looking, you know, who can find the most distant thing. But that's really not why we do it, to be honest. What we're doing is we're trying to look back in time to see how objects formed. So if you're interested in seeing how the first stars and the first galaxies, how the universe behaved at those very early times, that's why you want to look at the most distant objects, really, because you're looking back at the earliest objects in the universe. So I think those observations were done with, in fact, an array of radio telescopes all the way across Europe, of which the Jodrell Bank telescope was part. So it was actually the Mark II telescope at Jodrell Bank that took part in that observation just a few years ago.
So these objects are accreting objects onto a supermassive black hole, like a galaxy, for instance, all falling into the central black hole, billions of light years away.
Yep.
And because the Lovell telescope is a radio telescope, these objects are emitting in radio waves. Mm-hmm. So you see it, so to speak, in radio light.
Yeah.
How many of these things do we know?
Well, at that sort of, there's a lot of quasars. In general, there are lots of quasars. At those sorts of redshifts, there's not very many. We're talking about, of order 10 or so that are known, that sort of level, at that distance, they're really quite a rare bunch. But that's because once you get them, although they're intrinsically very bright, once you put them at those really large distances, then in fact they become quite faint, and so harder to detect, in fact. So it's interesting because at some point there won't be any more of them. Yes. The farther away you look, and the farther back in time you look, we're obviously going to go beyond the point at which these things are formed. So that's the other reason for pushing that back, you're going to see more of them at certain times in the universe than at other times. So we try to understand the sort of history and the evolution of these objects through the history of the universe. So that's really what underlies those studies. Now, I should say that was talking about the most distant object. That's the most, certainly one of the most distant individual objects we see. The farthest back we can see is something called the cosmic microwave background radiation.
Cosmic microwave background.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, the CMB, for short. It's basically the fading glow of the Big Bang. So when the Big Bang happened 13.5 billion years or so ago, the universe was very hot and it was very dense and it was expanding. And as it expanded, it cooled down and it became less dense. And if you can imagine that at the early times, because the universe was so dense, it was basically opaque. So any light that there was being absorbed and scattered by material. The universe was dense. It was like walking around in a fog. You can't see very far through a fog. But as the universe expanded, that fog thins out, and eventually you start to be able to see right through the fog and right the way across the universe in this case. Now, that time at which the universe became transparent was about 300,000 years or so after the Big Bang. That light that was emitted at that time, that was generated at that time by the universe when it became transparent, that light is still travelling through space now. Because the universe has expanded, that light, which started off as visible light, sort of orangey sort of colour, has been stretched out to longer wavelengths, right down into the radio part of the spectrum. And that's what we now call this microwave background radiation. It's in the microwave part of the spectrum.
So we still see, we can see now in radio light, a cooling universe.
Yeah. So so the universe as a whole has cooled right down now. That the temperature of that radiation is only about 3 degrees above absolute zero. So that's 270 degrees below zero Celsius. It's incredibly cold. But it started off at about 3,000 degrees. So it started off as a reasonably hot universe at the time it was emitted. The universe has expanded, it's cooled down, and we see it now in the radio part of the spectrum. So in fact, that radiation we see coming from everywhere, because the Big Bang in fact took place everywhere in the universe.
Yes.
And so we look in any direction, we see that radiation coming towards us, left over from the Big Bang. We pick it up with our telescopes here, but interestingly enough, you can actually pick it up with a TV aerial, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, your own TV is a cosmic microwave background detector. Right, if you were able to tune it to the channels between the normal TV transmissions, if you could get static on your TV, then a few percent of the photons, the radio waves that produce that static on the screen that's not tuned to a channel, a few percent of those radio waves are actually from the Big Bang.
So they've been travelling for over 13 billion years.
Yep.
To get to your TV.
Yep.
As static.
Right. Yep. As static, unfortunately.
Yeah. Brilliant. So our third question is, have you ever discovered a star?
I guess the answer to that is probably yes. And the reason I say that, and the reason I say probably, it's a question that, you know, it's interesting to try and answer, because you've got to realise how many stars there are out there, first of all. I think that's the important thing. In our galaxy alone, in the Milky Way, there's probably a few hundred billion stars, so a few hundred thousand million stars. Now, we haven't catalogued all the stars, even in our own galaxy. So if you were to take a very deep image, if you take a big telescope, take a CCD camera or some sensitive detector on the telescope, and you were to take a long exposure image of that bit of sky, you will see some very faint stars, and it's likely that some of those stars will not have been catalogued by any astronomy before, so they won't necessarily have a name.
So they wouldn't be on an atlas or a map.
That's
or
right.
previously noted down.
Yeah, it just really depends on it. You know, these stars will get catalogued when somebody does a survey of a patch of sky for whatever reason. It may be a very deep survey, in other words, a very long exposure that sees very faint objects on a small patch of sky, in which case, if you happen to point your telescope in that direction, yeah, sure enough, maybe somebody has catalogued all the ones in that direction. But because it takes a long time to do a survey of the whole sky, then generally large-scale surveys that cover a large part of the sky are not as deep. So in other words, they don't see as faint stars as a smaller-scale survey. So yeah, pointing your telescope in a random direction in the galaxy, take a long enough exposure, you're probably going to discover a star. So I don't absolutely know if I've discovered a star. I don't actually care whether I've discovered a star.
That's right.
There are
so many of them.
That's right. That it's not that valuable a thing to have done in that sense. What's more important is, you know, what you understand about them and whether they're useful for
what
anything.
What do you do with them?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Those are just three questions that we received from the public through the Jodcast webpage and from visitors to Jodrell Bank Observatory. So it just remains for me to thank Dr. Tim O'Brien for answering those questions, and we'll be talking to you again next month, I'm sure, for the next edition of Jodcast with some more questions.
Okay, thanks, Nick.